Last week we went through Perek Yud. I think we managed to get through the whole worldview of the Chacham in this Perek last week, and we sort of gets frustrated at the end of the Chacham because in his wisdom and his experience, he should be running the world, and he's not. And he's kind of lashing out at everybody and anybody. The Amal builds things and they collapse because he doesn't have the Chacham to guide him. The Sechal, the fool, even the Yirei Elokim he calls the fool. Eilach Eretz Shamakech Na'ar, woe to you, a land that your king is a Na'ar, a fool, a child. Eats out of laziness in the morning before accomplishing anything. And therefore he kind of ends up in this very frustrating place. And we'll come back to exactly why it's so frustrating and what's irking him. But for now, I want to focus on the last verse of this perek. Gam b'mada'acha melech al tekalel. In your mada, don't curse the king. Now, I have great issues with, there is no good translation, unfortunately, of Kohelet. There's really no good consistently good translation that I've found to any part of Tanakh, because in some ways some are better than others, and other ways in reverse. So the word mada'acha here does, I don't think, means your thoughts. I think it is a parallel, like many, many phrases in Tanakh that are couplets, meaning two halves of a phrase that mean the same thing. And so Madacha here is a parallel to Chadrei Mishkavcha, meaning in your bedchamber. So in your bedchambers, Al Tekalel Ashir, do not curse the rich. Do not curse the king in your Madacha, and do not curse the rich in your bedchamber. I don't think it's about your thoughts. It's the parallel of Mishkav, meaning your bedchamber, parallel to Madah here referring to where you, how can I put this?
Rabbi, maybe mada is like in a root, that's somebody that you know, moda'acha.
Modacha there actually means the same thing here. It means somebody who's supposed to marry you. Modacha means, in there it means a relation. Here it means kadamishkavcha. In what do you do in a bedchamber? You have relations. Vayeda adam et chava ishto, man, right? Or for example, the phrase of in Mishlei, Emor lachochma achoti at umoda labinati kra. Say to wisdom, you are my sister, you are my betrothed. Say to knowledge, moda, or bina, that you are my moda and a betrothal or relation. It comes from the biblical phrase by Adam and Chava, by Yeda Adam et Chava Ishto, as the idiom goes, to know somebody in the biblical sense, right? In your place where you have relations, in your most intimate and secret places, in your most intimate moments and in your bedchambers, in your secret places where you think you are safe, where you think you are in control, where you think that nobody can hear you, you speak the most intimate things to your partner. That is where I am saying to you, Melech al tekalel and al tekalel ashir. Do not curse the king. Do not curse the wealthy. Why? Because there are birds of the sky that will carry your voice. Wings may tell the matter. In English, the idiom is the walls have ears. Right? It doesn't make it. You think you are in the most intimate, quiet, secret place in your that could possibly be. No. There's always somebody more powerful than you. There's always somebody who can tell your secrets. The walls have ears. The birds, the wings that will speak your voice. What's going on here? This verse is the reaction of the Yirei Elokim. How do I know it's the Yirei Elokim? Because what voice is being employed here? Second person. Madacha. Melech al tekalel. He's back to giving advice. He's back to giving rebuke. He's back to telling whoever is the Chacham in this case, be careful what you say. Be careful how you say it. Don't curse the king. Don't curse the wealthy. Stop cursing. Because even the birds of the sky will carry your voice. The question, and as we see from the rest of the perek, or the next perek, I should say, I mean, again, the chapter divisions are misleading, right? From verse 19, which is the end of the Chacham, verse 20 is immediately into the words of the Yirei Elokim. You can see from the style, from verse 20, if you continued into the next chapter, you would see the continuation. Shlach, he's still talking to you, second person. Shlach lach mecha al pnei amayim. Cast your bread upon the waters. You'll find it eventually. Give a portion to seven. Put away a portion for eight. And he continues, this entire chapter is in second person. He's speaking to you, speaking to the other voices. To whom he's speaking, we're going to address chapter 11, Bezrat Hashem, next week. But I want to understand, this is the reaction of the Yirei Elokim. And his response to the Chacham, immediate response that he articulates here at the end of chapter 10, is, in your most intimate moments and secret places, don't curse the king, don't curse the wealthy, because the birds of the sky will carry your voice. What does that mean? What is driving the Chacham, and what is the reaction of the Yirei Elokim in this regard? So for this, we need to kind of take a step back, and I want to use this as an opportunity to kind of look at a bird's eye view of, pardon the pun, that was not intentional, an overview of the different voices that we've had and that we've encountered, who's speaking when and where, and a kind of a map, if you will, of the picture, because what I want to kind of understand is not just the Chacham's words here, but the transformation, the transition that the Chacham has undergone in the course of this text, and why this sentence reacts specifically not just to the words of the Chacham, but to the transitions of the Chacham in this regard. And so for that, we need to kind of put ourselves back into the world of the Chacham. If you remember, the Chacham and the Yirei Elokim had a kind of a debate back in chapter 6 and 7. No, it's 7, actually, 7 and 8. And at the time that the Chacham was articulating his message initially, if I go back to chapter 7 for a moment, the very end of the Chacham's words to, remember that was the first time we saw the Chacham, Tov Shemi, Shemen Tov, Yom HaMavet, Yom HaVoldo, good name, better than perfume. He had the sort of Mishlei style character to it. We talked about what it meant, this idea of acceptance of the world of death. And at the end of it, he lashed out, he says, Alti tzadikabe, don't be so righteous, don't be so wicked, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, tovashitachos basevik, amizel tanach yadecha, if you remember the world of the Chacham back in chapter 7. And at the end of that diatribe or speech, he said two things. He said, in Pesukim Chav Alef and Chav Bet, gam lechol advarim ashei yidaberu, Alti ten libecha. He's speaking to the Yirei Elokim, right? Alti tzadika be, right? Don't be so righteous. Don't be so wicked. Ki adam ein tzadik baratz shi'aseh tov v'lo yechta. There's no one on earth who can be so good and not sin, right? He's speaking to the Yirei Elokim, and he says to him, gam l'chol adverim asher yidaberu alti ten libecha. Don't take heed to all the words that are spoken. This is sensitive. Ashilot ishmat avdecha mikalelecha. You should not hear your servant curse you. Ki gam pa'amim rabot yata libecha shegam ata kilalta achemim. Because, says the Chacham to the Yirei Elokim, you know that you also, from time to time, cursed others. You're not so perfect yourself. And because you're not so perfect yourself, you might have also cursed others, and you might have also been guilty of such a crime. So don't be so haughty and over-righteous and say, oh, you know, somebody's cursing somebody else. You shouldn't You don't be so picky about words and about ideas and about righteousness. Call it the Mashiach the Beit. Well, don't be so pedantic. Lest you hear your servant curse you, and you know many times you've cursed others. So in that world of the Chacham and his great discovery of philosophy of acceptance of the world of death, the Yirei Elokim responded by rejecting the foundation of the Chacham, if you remember, right? He responded by he responded by talking about the jumping back to the model or to the metaphor of Mishle, of the good woman and the bad woman, the woman who is marmi mavet, who's worse than death. That's chokhmah, that's not anchored in Torah, that's not anchored in wisdom and Yirat Shemayim, or not anchored in Torah and Yirat Shemayim. And then there is the good woman who is the woman, the Torah and the chokhmah of Torah. That's where the phrase emor lachokhmah achoti at ulemoda binatikra. In that context, the Yirei Elokim did not respond to the words, to the message of the Chacham, or to the arguments of the Chacham. The Yirei Elokim simply rejected the Chacham, because he rejected the foundation of a wisdom based on human experience rather than on a revealed faith or Torah. And when we got into Perek Chet, we got into a whole different issue, which was the issue of also debate between the Chacham and the Yirei Elokim, but over the issue of reward and punishment and accountability, etc. At no point in that discussion had the Yirei Elokim gone back to the words of the Chacham here, in part, the concluding comments of the Chacham regarding this notion of being sensitive to words and cursing others and others cursing you, like this whole idea of the Chacham, that you can accept the world as it is. And so the Yirei Elokim has kind of been waiting. And now at the end of Perek Yud, after this second speech of the Chacham, and we'll talk about why he's waited till here, but after the second speech of the Chacham, the Yirei Elokim pipes back and he says to him, almost a kind of a direct response to the chapter 7, verses 21 and 22, Gam b'mada'acha melech al tekalel v'chadrei mishkavcha al tekalel ashir. You, my dear friend Chacham, you want to talk about not cursing? You're the one who needs to hold back.
Why is that an answer? Why, you know, okay, so he said don't swear curse.
But why is that an answer? We're gonna come to that. That's what I want to get to today. Right?
Okay.
It says essentially arguing to him and saying to him, stop. What is a curse? Well, a curse is a kind of a complaint, a negative attack on others.
So you're wishing something bad on someone else. That's
yeah,
what
it's, but it's the same. Right? In this case, he is wishing something bad on something else. He's wishing bad on everybody, on the Admal and the Yirei Elokim, because, and we'll see exactly why he did so. But that's where he comes back and he says, "You want to talk to me about, right, about the fact that you accused the Yirei Elokim of being a hypocrite." Says the Yirei Elokim to, in the language of the Chacham, you, my dear friend Chacham, you are in no position to critique and to offer curse to others, melech al tekalel, because of a shamayim elicha takol, every word you speak in the most hidden, most places of the bedchambers is taken by the birds of the sky to the heavens. What that means, we'll come to in a second. All right, so this is a very... this is a key phrase, but it's also very esoteric. What does the birds of the sky have to do with? Right? On the face of it, it simply means that there are no secrets. You think there are secrets, but there are no secrets. It's the old expression. If you want something kept secret, don't say anything to anybody, because nobody's able to maintain that kind of privacy. Even b'chadam ishkavcha, even in the most intimate of places. So to understand what's going on here in this verse, we need to take a step back and understand the transitions that each personality has taken in the course of Qohelet. And this is a very good place to do it because we're right before the final summation, if you will, of the Yirei Elokim. And sometimes, you know, you sort of, with all of the details and the nuances of text of line by line, we sometimes lose forest of the bigger picture, lose sight of the bigger picture of the forest of the trees. So what I have prepared for you, and it's a work in progress. I will share it with you in this as a source page next week. But for now, it's a work in progress. I've been working on putting together this document. This document is a summary of a map of each of the voices of Qohelet, one by one. And I put each one on a separate page. Hebrew and the English next to it. Again, I do not guarantee the translation. This is taken off the public website of Ala Torah. And I've got issues with some of the translations, but I did not have time to write my own translation. So that's just what it is.
This is not a good translation.
None of them are really good translations. I haven't found any good translation. But it's as if you take what we've said and kind of add it to it, you'll find, unfortunately, translations are by themselves commentaries, and our commentary took us in a different direction. However, what it does do is I've given you a list of each of the speeches that we have had, and what I will hopefully do by next week is color code it, so that each voice speaks in a different color, and you can kind of see it visually. But what I wanted to point out in this structure is that the book really divides into two parts. And we saw that at some point early by the fact that in Perek Zion, I'm not sure you're going to see it in this text, but Perek Zion, which begins, oh, you do, with a large letter Tet, in a Tanakh also there's a paragraph break between the end of chapter 6, the beginning of chapter 7. It's Qohelet is essentially two paragraphs. One is chapters 1 through 6, and the other is chapter 7 through the end. And so this transition between chapter 6 and chapter 7 divides the book in half. In the first part of the book, up until chapter 6, you have essentially an introduction to all of the voices of the and personalities of the book. Then you have the Ne'enatan who began with the speech of the Shir Ha'itim, the song of the times, if you will. Then you have the Yirei Elokim's response to it. And you have the Amal, the Nanatan's speech, and you have the Amal's response to that. We talked about the tear of the oppressed. Then the Yirei Elokim's response to the Amal, we talked about the hierarchy. And finally, the Amal's response to the Yirei Elokim and to the Nanatan talked about the attempt to build society, and that fails, an attempt to kind of create a meaningful world, and ultimately that collapsing as well. Then the Chacham speaks in chapter 7. The Yirei Elokim and the Chacham have a kind of a sub-argument about the world of wisdom and its value. The Ne'enatan responds by addressing the question of reward and punishment that was raised in that debate. The Chacham responds in our chapter to this attack on who is running the world and who should be running the world. And the Yirei Elokim will have the last word in chapter 11. Okay. But if I look at this from the perspective of a division of two halves, this is not a editable document, so I can't do it here. But if you look at it from the perspective of the opening half, the Ne'enatan, the Amal, the Yirei, the Amal, or the Amel, and then the second half, the Chacham, the Yirei, the Ne'enatan, and the Chacham again. Essentially, in each half of the book, you have one primary personality to whom the others are reacting. In the first half of the book, the primary personality to whom the others are reacting or responding was the Amel. And in the second half of the book, the primary personality to whom the others are reacting was the Chacham. And if the Nenatan and the Yirei Elokim appear in the first half of the book, they also appear in the second half of the book. The Amel writes himself out of the script at the end of chapter 6, and the Chacham takes his place. Okay? This is part of a broader review, but I want to see it here because it's important for us to understand. The Chacham and the Amel are very different than the Yirei and the Nenatan. The Chacham and the Amel, for the most part, see themselves as the Balabatim in the world. They are the ones addressing the needs of the world, the direction of the world, how to run the world, how to control the world, how to understand the world. They are the Balabatim. The Nenatan and the Yirei Elokim, both of them took the perspective from various angles that we're not in control. So we're not the Balabait. Chacham and the Yirei certainly thought they were in control. They're the Balabatim. The Nenatan and the Yirei Elokim said, we're not in control. The Nenatan said, we're not in control at all. And the Yirei Elokim said, we're not in total control. And so in many ways, they are the guests. They are the Oreach, benefiting from the world that God created in the language of the Nenatan of the opening passage of chapter 3. And so as we go through the text, we've been kind of looking at them individually, but really what you have is an internal conversation between three at any given time, the Amel and against the Nenatan and the Yirei Elokim, and the Chacham against the Amel and against the Nenatan and the Yirei Elokim. And so it's important to see what are the transitions, what happens to each of them. Because what we'll find, and this is really the core, the conclusion that I want to understand today, is that unlike the Yirei Elokim, each one of the personalities of Kohelet goes through a kind of transformation. There is an anchor point that defines who they are. The Amel's anchor point is that he's the one responsible for the world. The Nenatan's anchor point is that he's not in control of the world. The Chacham's anchor point is that he's the one trying to understand the world, right? Those are the three personalities. But their conclusions take them from point A to point B to point C. They transition. They change. And because of that, they essentially work themselves out of the script, if you will. The only personality remains consistent in their message from beginning to end, which we would expect, because that's the message of the book, is the Yirei Elokim. Although he's speaking to different voices at different times. So if we take a quick survey, quick bird's eye view of each one of them and to try to understand where they're coming from. I'm going to start, and we're going to work it through, not in sequence, but in topic. I want to start Dafka with the Amel, and then we'll do the Nenatan, and then the Yirei Elokim, and then the Chacham. The Amel, if you remember, was actually started in chapter 2 and 3. The Amel started in this discussion in the beginning with this kind of perspective that the world revolved around him. He was building, he was creating, he was doing, he was trying to achieve something, but he was haunted. What was he haunted by? He was haunted by the issue of his own death, by the issue of the finality of the world. He used the expression, Saneti ani et kol amali shani amel tachat hashemesh shani chenu la'adam shi'acharai. He had this frustration that he should have to leave everything to somebody else. So he's toiling and building and doing and creating. The question becomes, what is he in the shadow of death? His efforts are going to be finite. So what's it going to all accomplish? Where is it going to all go? What's he going to do with it? And so that was the challenge of the book, to try to find a resolution to that question. That led him to chapter 4, which is where the Amel came up with the suggestion that and he starts with the notion that responds to the Nanatan, who said that we're just here for the ride, we're just going to enjoy the ride, and even if there's injustice in the world, we're just going to tolerate it. And the Ne'emel, who sees the world resting on his shoulders, says, I can't do that. I can't live in a world in which Nimat Ashukim, where there's the tear of the oppressed, and there's no address to that tear. So something has to happen. I have to be responsible. There has to be a response in some way to that crisis. So his suggestion or his initial response is, okay, I can't solve the problem myself, but maybe we can all get together as a society, as a community, as a malchus, as a chevra. We can gig the idea of a chuta mishulash lo b'mirayin atek, that we tovim ashnayim min achad, two are better than one, to solve the certain problem of the finality of one versus two, expand that into three, expand that into an entire society, and a malchus. And let's see if, as a society, we can solve that crisis. And of course, that led him to the ultimate crisis, which is a recognition on a very personal level. He, king, sees his own kingdom and his own society and his own children and his own continuity, and he sees it as a failure. Tov yelad misken v'chacham mimelach zakenu k'sila shelo yadali zeher od. Right? The foolish king who doesn't know how to be careful. And in the end, gam b'malchuto nolad rash, even in his kingdom, it was born poverty, meaning he is not going to achieve the goal that we have set out. And so that fails. And he ends exactly where he started, which is in chapter 6, because then he tries a second effort. Come to chapter 6. Then he has a second effort, which is, okay, if I'm not going to strive for a communal solution, then at least in my own family, in my own world, in my own personal achievements, let me at least transfer it over to the next generation, continuity within the family line. That doesn't work either, says the Amel, because what happens if I lose it all, right? What happens if I accomplish everything and it all comes crashing down? Or really, he says, that's the existential state of every person. That's the reality we live in, says the Amel. You can never achieve all there is to achieve in this world. He uses the expression, kol amal adam lefiu v'gam nefesh lo timale. That ultimately, here it is, that's what I'm looking for, that ultimately a person can toil and toil and toil, but he's never satiated, because ultimately if we look at the human being as the central anchor of the world and say, if it's all on my shoulders, he's going to fail. And so he'll never be satiated, he'll never be satisfied, he'll never be able to accomplish it all. Not him, and not his partners or society. Without the answer, the Yirei Elokim, which is without that sense of partnership with God, it's not going to work. And so his conclusion at the end of this is, Tov mimenu anefel, that it's better not to be born. And since that is not an option, the Amel has written himself out of the book. So essentially, Amel has taken the transition point. He starts with this question of, what's it all for if there's haunted by the finality of a person's life, what am I accomplishing? Shifts to the broader picture of continuity through society, shifts back to the more narrow picture of continuity through himself and through his own family lineage, and comes to the conclusion that if ultimately the responsibility, the goal, the picture is to place everything on my shoulders, then we are going to fail. And so he ends up essentially arguing that it's better not to be born, and better not to be born is not an option for Kohelet, writes himself out of the book. And so that's the transition of the Yamel. That brings us to, I'm going to skip the Chacham, we'll come back to the Chacham in a moment. That takes us to the Ne'anatan. The Ne'anatan also went through a similar kind of transformation from one perspective to another. The Ne'anatan of all the personalities of Kohelet started on the highest kind of spiritual plane, if you will, where he talks about in chapter 2 and 3, in this kind of idyllic world of l'kol zman ve'et l'chol chefetz, is a time and a place for everything, because ultimately God controls the world. We are God's guests. God is the one who created us. We are guests in God's world. We have no ability to change the world. Our goal is to benefit from God's world. The problem he ran into is the problem of mishpat, the problem of society, the problem of people interacting with each other in a way that is not in consonance with what God wants of them. The notion that there is evil in this world, and therefore, if to be true to his conclusion that God is in control, so he says, okay, so God will deal with the righteous and the wicked. Let God deal with it. Where? In that world. And so he's willing to live in this world, enjoy this world, and enjoy the ride in this world, provided he has that sense that, okay, so God will deal with righteous and wicked, and God will deal with society's ills. We are here to benefit from the world. That, on the other hand, comes crashing down, because the Ne'anatan, who responds at the beginning of this text, the next time we see him is in response to the Chacham and the Yireh. The Ne'anatan only speaks twice, here at the beginning, and then at the end, after the Chacham and the Yireh introduce the question of reward and punishment in this world. The Chacham and the Yireh have this debate over whether or not there is accountability, whether man is accountable fast enough, whether there's justice that is perceived, not just pursued. The Chacham's final words were, because sentence against evil is not executed quickly, therefore man is set to do more evil. Man can do crimes 100 times and live long life. Right? That was the debate between the Chacham and the Yireh Elokim. In walks the Ne'anatan and says, well, if you're going to take the approach that God is in control and we are powerless to change the world, then let's apply that principle to the world of reward and punishment. And in the world of reward and punishment, there is no rhyme or reason whatsoever to this world. There is absolute anarchy. There is the righteous who suffer the fate of the wicked. There is the wicked who are rewarded as if they are the righteous. Akol, everybody dies in the end of the day. There is one end to it all. There is no rhyme or reason, and therefore he completely rejects the notion of any kind of accountability or reward and punishment. Now we are into a world in which there is nothing beyond the physical world, even to the point where in the grave itself there is nothing. And even in the grave itself, he says there is nothing beyond the grave. Kol asher timtzei yadcha la'asot b'kochacha aseh, anything you want to do, do. Ki ein ma'aseh v'cheshbon v'dat v'chochma b'sheol asher ata olech shama. There is no knowledge, reckoning, accountability, wisdom, or understanding in the grave to which you go. And the Ne'anatan has essentially taken the position that man is, that this world is all we have, and our job is to literally just benefit, enjoy it as much as we can, because it's finite. So if you take a look at the world of the Amel and the world of the Ne'anatan, they have opposite trajectories. the Amil starts with the sense of what is man's place in the world. And he starts with the perspective of a great responsibility. Man has so much to accomplish, has so much to create, so much to build. Man is huge, but he ends the Amil with a world in which man is powerless to accomplish anything, and therefore man is very small. So the Amil starts with a very big perspective on what the man, what the human being is capable of doing, and he ends up with a total failure. The Nenatan is the exact opposite. He starts with the perspective of God. God is in control. God made a perfect world. God made a beautiful world. God is running this world. Then he ran into several roadblocks. Mishpat, evil, man persecuting man, what are you going to do? Right? And he ends up with a world in which there's virtually no room left for God at all. So we end up with virtually nothing for God outside of the act of creation itself, maybe. And so the Amil had taken us from the world of man. He had taken us from the top of the mountain to the abyss. And the Nenatan had taken us from the world of God, from the top of the mountain into the abyss. Those are your two extremes. Now, given that perspective, and both of them, because they've dramatically changed their perspective so radically, right, there cannot be an answer to the book, because essentially they've driven themselves into a circle. So where does that leave us with the Chacham? The Chacham essentially spoke twice, even though the first speech that he has is broken into two parts. That's because the Yarei interrupts him in the middle, and they have this kind of middle, in-between debate about the world of wisdom and the world of revelation. But essentially, the Chacham speaks twice, chapter 7 and chapter 9. Now go back to chapter 7. What was the foundation of the Chacham? Foundation of the Chacham was, if you remember, Tov, Shem, Mishem, Tov, death, better than life, better than go to a house of mourning rather than to a face house of feasting. Why? Because it's much more realistic. Much more realistic. In a house of feasting, there's no reality. People aren't living in the real world. Death is a real part of the world, so learn to live with it. And his perspective in chapter 7 introduces a different approach to the question of how to deal with mortality. The Amel's solution to mortality was constantly trying to conquer it, overcome it, win over it, and he fails. The Nenatan essentially ignores mortality. It just doesn't exist to the world of the Nenatan. So the only existence is what we have right now. The Chacham came along and said, mortality exists. Mortality is real. Not only is it real, it's like it's the ultimate chisaron. It's the ultimate flaw in the creation of the world. And therefore, it's a sort of like a prismila, kind of a take. So it removes from the world a piece of existence. And we have to learn to live with that. The world is not perfect. And the Chacham's observation is a reality check. Reality check. Is the world perfect? No. Reality check. Does death exist? Yes. Reality check. Are people sometimes happy and sometimes sad? Yes. Okay. So instead of living in a delusional world of the Nenatan, or in the wasted world of the Tzaddik, or in the futile world of the Amel, says the Chacham, live in the here and now and accept the good parts of the world and the bad parts of the world and learn to live with a kind of an acceptance of it. If there's any philosophy of the Chacham in Perek Zion, remember the Chacham is a philosopher, which means that he's assessing, he's analyzing the world through a laboratory, through the lens of what do I see? It's a reality check. The reality is there is death in this world. The reality is there is life in this world. There's good things, there's bad things. And so you need to live a balance. What does he say to the Yirei Elokim? Alti tzedikabe, don't be so righteous. Why should you be too, why should you wither away in your righteousness? But on the other hand, alti sharbe, don't be so wicked. Why? Because crime doesn't pay. We know that from Mishlei, lama tamut b'lo etecha. A little bit of righteous, a little bit of wickedness, tamo shetuchos b'zeh, nizal tanech edecha. Right? A little bit of everything. Ultimately, that's the message of the Yirei Elokim. Of the Chacham. Learn to, don't be so angry all the time, because, right, that's what he said to the Amel, don't be so angry. Tov erach ruach migvar ruach, better be patient than angry, because it's not about anger, it's not about can you accomplish more. It's about the reality, the world is what it is, and you navigate the best you can in a balance of it all. Okay, and that's how we ended up with the statement about don't curse others. Others, you've cursed others yourselves. You're not perfect either. Accept the world as it is. That ran into a challenge. What was the challenge? The challenge came in Perek Chet, after the Yirei Elokim rejected this philosophy of the Chacham because it was based on human experience rather than revealed Torah, or revealed knowledge, then you got into this sub-argument, back and forth. Mika Chacham, Ani, Pimelech Shmor, right? The sub-argument back and forth. What was the sub-argument back and forth? The sub-argument back and forth was over the question of reward and punishment. Bayat HaGmul, as it's referred to in the literature, reward and punishment. Whereas the Chacham made the argument that there is that the righteous suffer, or the wicked prosper, if you will, however you want to look at it, right? The Yirei Elokim wanted to argue that ultimately God, there is an element of mishpat, there's an element of accountability before God, and you can't just live through a kind of a life of acceptance of whatever righteousness and good and evil there is, because, says the Yirei Elokim, you're accountable before God. And if you're not accountable in this world, if you see an injustice in this world, so there's an accountability in the next world. So at some point or another, everybody will stand before God in judgment. Nobody escapes death. Nobody escapes ultimately their accountability. To which the Chacham and the Yirei Elokim does back and forth. What are you talking about? I see lots of people who think that they can get away with evil in this world because there is no accountability. And the Yirei Elokim says, no, they're not getting away with it. They're being held accountable. Ultimately, God's a partnership with God. And you have this back and forth with the Yirei Elokim. That led to Perek Yud. And in Perek Yud, the Chacham came along. Actually, I'm going to start with Perek Chet. In Perek Chet, the Chacham, sorry, the Nehenatan, took the argument of the Chacham, namely, that you can learn to live with the reality of the world as it exists today, and he applied it to the principle of reward and punishment. Talk about Chacham, you talk about acceptance, so let's apply that to the resignation that the world is imperfect. Let's apply that to the world of reward and punishment. And let's conclude that there is no accountability in the world of reward and punishment, because that's also imperfect. That's also flawed. That led the Chacham to a direct turnaround. And the Chacham in chapter 9 and 10 is a different Chacham. Because what's essentially his argument in chapter 10? His argument in chapter 10 is Yesh ra'a ra'iti tachat ha-shamash. There is a terrible folly and evil in this world. That in itself is something you wouldn't expect from the Chacham. A Chacham who says that the world is what it is and we just have to accept it, suddenly is talking about an evil in this world. And what's the evil? Not only is it in this world, but it's kishgagashi etzam lifnei ha-shalit. It's like an error that emerged from the ruler, meaning it's an error created by God himself. What's the mistake? What's the error? What's the problem? What's irking the Chacham? Nitana secha b'amaramim rabim b'ashirim b'shefu yeshevu ve'iti avadim asusim mishavim ochim kavadim la'aretz. I see servants on horses, princes walking like servants. It's an upside down world. What's irking him? That he, the Chacham, is not in control. That he, the Chacham, is not running the world. That's what we talked about last week. The Amel runs the world. He builds something without a design, without a plan, without proper research, without proper understanding. The Chacham's not there to tell him how to do it. He's going to fall into the pit and get bitten by a snake. Wars go on. People go into battle with instruments that aren't sharp because there's no Chacham to tell them how to do it. And people aren't listening to the Chacham because the Chacham does not have wealth and power in this world. Right? Wisdom is the end of the words of the Nenatan was that Chachmat Kem Zuya, that the wisdom is never listened to because it's the wisdom of poor people. The poor man's wisdom is despised because it's not going to get anywhere. In this world, we honor, we worship wealth. Says the Chacham, you're right. It's not because it's not wealthy, but if you do listen to the Chacham has the ability. The Chacham is perfect. The world of perfection is easy to destroy. But ultimately, it's valuable. It's significant. It can change the world. It can solve wars. It can bring peace. It can guide people to build correctly. If only the wealthy would listen to the wise. If only the powerful would listen to the wise. If only the religious would listen to the wise. If the Chacham would only be in charge of this world. Woe to you, a land that is run by fools. Says the Chacham, at the end of the day, the biggest problem in this world is that I am not in charge. And that's where we ended up last week. But you understand that there's nothing more paradoxical. There's nothing more paradoxical for the Chacham than to say, there's an evil in this world. I'm not in charge and should be. The world is not as it should. The whole philosophy of the Chacham was that the world is and we need to accept it. And now he comes along and says, wait a second, no, the world's not. The world, it's not a world that is and we need to accept it. It's a world that is and we need to change it. It's a world that's frustrating and a world that should be cursed because I'm not in control and I'm not in charge and I'm not directing the ML and I'm not directing the Arelikim and I'm not directing the Nenatan and I should be the one in charge. I should be the Melech. Ashrech Eret Shemaket Ben Chumi. Comes along the Arelikim. And he says, my dear Chacham, there is nothing more paradoxical than you, Chacham, who said, learn to live with everything, learn to accept everything, than for you to curse and for you to complain and for you to claim that the world isn't what it should be and that you should be in charge, that you should be the Melech, that you should be in control. You think you are the most powerful thing on this planet? I got news for you. The birds are more powerful than you. The most secrets that you can whisper in your bedchambers can be carried by the birds of the sky. You are not the most powerful thing in the world. And so you, Chacham, learn to live with the Mitzvah, that notion that you're going to learn to live with the reality as it is, right? For you to turn around now and complain and to curse and to challenge everybody else essentially is a contradiction in your own position, which places the Chacham in exactly the same place as the Nenatan and the Amel. Namely, you start at position A, arguments back and forth, you end up in a different position that undermines where you started from, and therefore they write themselves out of the script. And that's more or less what is happening here. I'm going to stop now that I've kind of spent most of this guy kind of addressing this. I'll stop for questions. And if somebody had a comment or question just now.
Yeah, it sounds like the Chacham has become very much like the Gamel, who wants to improve the world, who thinks he has a lot to offer.
For sure, that's exactly the point. Each one of them kind of ends up walking themselves into a circle where they find where their end point is somebody else, right, which doesn't work. And that's exactly what I think the Chacham is telling him here. He says, look at it from this perspective. You Chacham, Mada. There's a reason why he uses the word Mada to describe intimacy, because he's talking to the Chacham. Emor lachochma binah mada lebinatikra. He's talking to the Chacham. He says, in your wisdom, in your most intimate moments of wisdom, you think you're all-powerful and can change the world? That's not the Chacham. The Chacham is supposed to accept the world. You are not the most powerful thing in this world. There's an irony to the fact that only the Yirei Elokim is really capable of accepting the notion that he's not in control of the world. It's fascinating. Everybody else wants to control the world. The Amel thinks the world is on his shoulders. The Nenatan thinks he's the only one who exists in this world. The Chacham wants to run the world because he's the most philosophical and most... Only the Yirei Elokim is satisfied with the notion that he's not in control.
So how does he answer the question of, free choice, like Bchira Chofsit, which we have from the beginning of Torah?
How does who answer?
The Yirei Elohim.
For sure, that's the whole idea of the Yirei Elohim, is that you have Bchira Chofsit, and you can choose a good path or choose a not path and be held accountable for your choices. We'll get to that.
That's part of accepting the world as it is? That's what you're saying?
No. The notion of acceptance is the world is the notion of the Chacham, not the Yirei Elokim. It was the Chacham who said back in chapter 6, accept the world as it is, can't change it. And then the Chacham in chapter 9, in chapter 10, came along and said, oh, but I'm not in control of this world, and that's terrible, so now we have to change the world. And the Yirei Elokim caught him. Right? That's the trap. The moment you take your position and change it, that's the trap. And that's where the Chacham catches him. Where the Yirei catches him. To the Yirei Elokim, for sure it's supposed to change. You're supposed to address the world, change it as best you can. But ultimately, the Yirei Elokim's perspective is that it's a partnership. You have to do whatever you can, and then the rest is up to God. Right? That's that partnership between man and God. That we'll get to in the last chapter. Our knowledge is limited, our scope is limited, our abilities are limited, but we have to try the best we can, and then we have to hope and place the rest in the responsibility of God. But it's fascinating that the whole book revolves around this question of control. Malchus, kingship. Who's in control? Who is the shalit? Who is the controller? Who is running this world? The Amel believes he's running this world. The Chacham wants to run this world. The Netan thinks he's the only thing in this world, right? There's this whole notion of control. Only the Yirei Elokim is prepared to accept the notion that there is a God in this world, and therefore he's not in control. And if he's not in control, anybody can be in control. In other words,
I don't understand how free choice comes into it, because if he really is not in control, and we got Nivra Betelem, and you have the choice, then he does have control, because he has the choice to choose, that's the whole idea that you have free choice.
You're confusing two things. What I'm suggesting is what the Chacham is talking about is actual political power. Okay. Melech. Eretz Melech. The Yirei Elokim's whole argument is you don't need political power to influence the world. Because you're Yirei Elokim. So who is the Melech? Doesn't matter. You want to see who the Melech can be? I'll show you in Yirmiyahu. Here's a fascinating quote from Yirmiyahu. Okay, Yirmiyahu is talking about, completely out of context, but it's Yirmiyahu, beginning of the realm of Yirei Elokim. Very famous phrase. where he talks about God says, I can made the world. Anochi asiti et haaretz et adama et habehima asher al pnei adama. I made the world with and all the animals in it with my hands, strong hands, and outstretched arm. Kochi agadol unetzuyen etuya unetati al asher yeshar b'nai. And I gave this world to whomever I chose, whoever was right in my eye at that moment. Says Yirmiyahu to the people of Israel, Erev, the Churban, the destruction of the temple, Ata anochi netati et kol haaretzot ha'elo b'yad Nebuchadnezzar melech bavel avdi. I now give all of these lands over to Nebuchadnezzar, my servant. In the world of any of the other personalities of Kohelet, that's a contradiction in terms. If I'm in control, I'm supposed to be in control. How could he give the world over to my enemy? But to the Yirei Elokim, who has a much broader scope of history, the Yirei Elokim says, it's not about political control. I can still be a Yirei Elokim and influence the world and change the world and do what I'm responsible and supposed to do to the best that I can under any circumstances that I'm placed. And so we can live in exile, maybe not an idyllic life, maybe temporary life, but we can live in exile, still be Yirei Elokim. It's not going to challenge our theology. Right? We can live in a world in which Melech Bavel is ruling the world and we are still servants of God. That's not going to challenge my theology. That's the whole point. And that's the message that the Yirei Elokim is trying to convey in this moment. You, Chacham, you think it's all about control, about Melech, that you need to be the Melech in order to have, right? The world is upside down because you're not the Melech. The world is upside down because the Avadim al-Susim, because those who should be, who are servants are on the horses and in positions of power, and those who are in positions of power, they should be the servants because I should be the Melech, says the Chacham to him. What says the Yirei Elokim to him? It's not about Melech. It's not about power. There's always somebody more powerful than you. It's about choice, it's about influence, it's about religiosity, it's about loyalty. It's a very different perspective from the Yirei Elokim. And so that's the moment that we're at, is the Chacham, the Yirei Elokim has now watched the Amel start, arc, and crash. He's watched the Nehenatan start, beautifully start, the world of God, perfect world. Arc and crash. And he's watched the Chacham. Now, finally, arc, start. Accept the world as it is. God created this world. Just accept it. Death exists. But he's arced. And he's crashed exactly just as the other three. And so that brings us to the world of the Yirei Elokim, who will have the final word. Now, the other observation I wanted to conclude with is that there's a very, you know, Qohelet is such a structured, even in its lack of structure, it's so structured. Meaning that if I go back to this chart of the text at the beginning, let's go back to the very beginning of it. If I look at this from the perspective, and I'll color code it next week, you'll see it better. But the Nenatan speaks first. And then he speaks at the end. The Amel speaks in chapter 4, and then he speaks again in chapter 5. The Chacham will speak in chapter 7 and speak again in chapter 9. Each one of them essentially has two speeches, an introduction, and then a reaction to the various arguments that has brought them to a conclusion that has enabled them to crash. So the Nehenatan more or less speaks twice, the Amel more or less speaks twice, the Chacham more or less speaks twice. The Yirei Elokim is the only one of our personalities who speaks three times. He addresses the Nehenatan and the Amel in chapter four or five, which is where he introduced the hierarchy. He addresses the Chacham in the world and world of reward and punishment in chapter 7 and 8, and then he will have the last word of chapter 11 and 12. So the text itself lends itself to the conclusion that the key voice to bring this debate to a close is, in fact, as we would expect, the Yirei Elokim, but he does so by enabling that just even the structure of the book is designed to bring us to the concluding message of the Yirei Elokim, which we will see Bezrat Hashem next week. So that's where we are at. Hopefully this will all be color-coded by next week, and I will share that with you, and we'll have an opportunity to kind of see the big picture.
What about the Olam Haba? Which of the ones take this in as an equalizer?
The Yirei Elokim. He's the only one who can.
Only the Yirei Elokim.
Correct. Well, he's the only one who can.
Didn't the Nehenatan also think that
Nehenatan, at the end of the day, the Nehenatan completely rejects the notion of Olam Haba. The Nehenatan in the previous chapter was the one who, after his whole realization about reward and punishment, the Nehenatan crashes completely and he says there's nothing beyond the grave.
So how does Yirei Elokim treat death?
So that's what we're going to get to. That's what we're going to get to next week.
Okay.
That's the key conclusion of the Sefer.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Because it seems to me they're all dealing with that eventually. So.
100%. That is the key piece of the story that the Yirei Elokim will address most directly and most profoundly. It's one of the most beautiful passages in Tanakh as a whole, if not in certainly in Sefer Kohelet. We'll deal with it, Bezrat Hashem, next week.
Certainly fascinating.
Could you have the color-coded sent through to
Yes, I will. Once I finish it, I will email it out. I'll put it on the website.
Yeah.
It'll be available to you. And again, I can't promise the translation. Translation, unfortunately, is what it is.
Yeah.
But the text will have all the pieces together.
Okay.
Can you also have a version that's not color coded, just black? I don't have a color printer.
Sure.
Okay. I'll just have to put in the margins. That's
even if you print it, it'll just print a little bit of a grayscale. So no problem. All right. Have fun, everybody.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.